Jeffrey Gettleman's new memoir, Love Africa, is really about three love affairs. With Africa, the continent Jeffrey first fell in love with on a college community service trip, crashing on the couch of a slightly older photographer named Dan Eldon. It's also a love story about Jeffrey's wife, Courtney. They met at Cornell. He studied Swahili, plotted to get back to Africa. She wanted to be consulted. It took years for their lives to align. And it's also a Valentine to journalism. Jeffrey's now the Pulitzer Prize-winning East Africa correspondent for the New York Times, still mindful of the editor who told him early on, don't be the white guy writing the Ooga Booga, the caricature of the black native. Courtney became Jeffrey's videographer in Africa and now runs a law enforcement program at the embassy in Nairobi, where they live with their two kids. How they got there is a harrowing tale. That inspirational photographer, Dan Eldon, was killed by a mob in Mogadishu. Jeffrey and Courtney almost died in several war zones. Jeffrey Gettleman joins us now with this story. And Jeffrey, I want to start at the beginning. What was the pull of Africa?
When I was a freshman in college, I had this urge to get to Africa because I knew so little about it.
Yeah, so this is the real Lonely Planet time. This was pre, you know, the terrorism that we now know. You were doing things like sneaking your way on a Mount Kilimanjaro to climb it, living on nothing, idyllic. You go back a couple summers later as an aid worker in a summer internship for Save the Children in Ethiopia. And I just want to talk about the moment when the lightning strike of journalism hit you. Sitting and talking to somebody as part of your work, what happened?
I was really lost that summer. I was really discouraged by the work I was doing as an aid worker. I knew exactly where I wanted to work. I was in love with East Africa, and I knew I wanted to make that part of my life. But I didn't know what I would be doing out there. And it was in this slum in Addis Ababa, and I was doing this newsletter for Save the Children, and I was getting information from a man who was running a street children project. And as I was conducting this interview, I felt myself getting excited about the process of asking questions and being connected to somebody.
You write, a current shot between us, you and this man. Wait a second, maybe this is it.
You know, I kind of have a theory that we're all just walking this earth trying to feel connected to other people. And journalism allows you this excuse, this pass, you know, your press pass, to try to connect with people that you would never otherwise interact with. And that moment is when I got that.
And yet you start in places like Florida. At the St. Petersburg Times, you track down a pedophile, a chilling story, then move to the New York Times and the war zones in Pakistan and Afghanistan, dangerous meetings with warlords. In Baghdad, you have to wipe tears from your eyes in order to write about the carnage of suicide bombings, human debris you come to call manslaughter. You were attacked by mobs, taken hostage, serious work. But there's another storyline here. Courtney is still back in the States. Let's be clear. You were very honest about this. You kind of slept your way through war zones as you started working around the world and disappointing yourself, but almost destroying this relationship with a woman who would then walk by your side through war zones.
Yeah, yeah. It was something that I will always regret. I did some serious damage to our relationship, and I struggled with that for years. Part of this book is about moral growth. You know, I started out as kind of a knucklehead. It took me a long time to figure out how to sort of be a better person.
Although some of the women that you had relationships with in the war zones, you could also see that this was, you know, two people who are not just thrown together, but they are thrown together into a van when they're captured. And I think this is with Elizabeth in Iraq, insurgents fighting over you, guns pointing in your faces. You could see how people might rush into each other's arms in war zones.
Your explanation of infidelity and sort of desperate hookups is very generous. But there's a truth to it, that you're in these situations where you feel assaulted and terrified and nervous and stressed out all the time. You're just totally overwhelmed with the destruction and the ruin and the sadness and the terror. And you're reaching out to somebody to get a break from that. And I did that.
You're also getting burnished along the way, we see. I mean, this is very Homeric. You know, we meet Jeffrey Gettleman on the beginning of his journey, this goofy guy, as you say, and we watch you go on your journey, this father of two at the end. Courtney eventually joins you as your videographer. Now the two of you are endangered. But can you describe, as you're, you know, getting attacked by mobs and scared out of your mind sitting down with a warlord, or, you know, just describe some of those experiences that led to that burnishing?
As a journalist, you want to try to cover the biggest, baddest story you can find. And often that makes you miss these warning signals and these trip wires as you're getting closer and closer to danger. For instance, my wife and I, one of the best stories we did was to cover a campaign by the Ethiopian military that was wiping out civilians in a part of Ethiopia where there's a minority ethnic group. We were meeting people with evidence of atrocities. We were walking through the desert with a rebel army. And the instant we came out of that zone and left the rebels, we were arrested, interrogated, threatened with death, and then put in an Ethiopian prison for a week. If you hear me say, oh, we were in a prison for a week, you think, oh, how bad can that be? It's just a week. But you don't know it's a week. Mm-hmm. And you spend every day thinking you're never going to get out and I'm never going to see my wife again and I've totally screwed up. I felt that and I was very lucky that I didn't lose my life in Iraq when I was kidnapped by insurgents in Fallujah.
Which is a completely different story. What happened there?
I was driving down a road to cover an attack on American forces and all of a sudden a van zoomed across the road and cut it off. And the next thing I know, there are dozens of men with masks on their faces and assault rifles, and they put guns to our head, and they say, are you American? And I had my passport on me, and I had just given it to the coworker I was with, a female photographer, who put it down the front of her pants, hiding it. And we then went through these intense interrogations with these guns in my head and these guys shouting at me, and the only way I got out of it was I told them that I was Greek. And they kind of looked at me like, you know, Greek? Nobody had ever met a Greek person in that part of Iraq. But I had developed this alias because I thought, you know, nobody's going to know how to speak Greek. And that saved my skin that day.
Yeah. Look, you mentioned the time you were, the horrible time that you were captured with your wife in 2007. At that time, your notebooks were taken by the Ethiopians, who then went after the rebels who had helped you. Many were killed. You end up asking the rebel commander, who becomes your friend back in Nairobi, do you think that journalists like you did more harm than good? Tell us his answer, but also, what's yours?
Well, that's kind of the operative question of the entire book. I would love it if other people avoided some of the same mistakes that I made. And one of them was this incident. And after we got arrested, the authorities took all of our equipment, our satellite phones, our computers, our notebooks, and they methodically went through all of our information and used that to hunt down some of the sources who had helped us. And that was a huge mistake. I should have typed up all my notes in the field, transmitted them by satellite phone, and then destroyed all that material out in the field. But I was dumb. I had no idea that the Ethiopian government, which is a close American ally and receives billions of dollars from American taxpayers, would treat us like an enemy. And I was in way over my head.
Yeah. But the United States in Africa, I mean, much has been said about well-intentioned stumbles that the U.S. has made. You write at one point, the values that America stands for are superb. It's what we do that makes a mockery of these values. What's that like when you are on the ground seeing the result of American policy and you know it's wrong at that moment?
It's horrible. I constantly felt like Africa was never getting the bandwidth that it deserved. If you look at the history of Somalia over the last 20 years, it's a chain of American mistakes. It was this bungled intervention in the 1990s where we went in to help people and then Black Hawk Down happened and we pulled out abruptly and left that country in chaos. And then in 2006, an Islamist group rose up to power, and they had a lot of grassroots support. And instead of trying to work with them, we backed this covert invasion that just resulted in more violence and death and destruction and a famine. And it would make me feel helpless because I'm writing, I'm shouting at the top of my voice from the front page of the New York Times about these issues, and they just keep happening. And I think Africa seems so exotic and foreign and almost irrelevant to American lives until all of a sudden it matters, like an embassy gets blown up or Ebola breaks out. But for those of us in the region, you see these things coming a mile away. We could see Somalia suffering and the bad weather that was going to lead to a drought, that was going to lead to a famine.
Look, we said this was a Homeric journey. When you were 30, you got a warning from another journalist. He said, I used to take all kinds of risks when I was 30, but now I'm 40 with two kids. I don't do that stuff anymore. You're in your 40s. You have two kids. Courtney, who was your partner through all of this, your videographer, how are you both changed? Would you ever be able to do this same thing?
I'm kind of hopeless because part of me knows that the worst thing I could do to my kids would be get myself killed. What are my responsibilities to the people that mean the most to me? And what are my responsibilities to this bigger group of people who I can write about and maybe help that way? And it's hard. So I will be going back. I don't think it'll ever be out of me.
Jeffrey Gettleman, East Africa Bureau Chief for The New York Times. The book is terrific. It's Love, Africa. Jeffrey, thank you.
My pleasure.